For years, the American public has been victimized by the so-called cinematic geniuses, telling us time and again to see inferior movies, leaving us bitter and lost with nowhere to turn. But no more! This travesty of justice cannot and will not continue, because we now have the Cinema Giants!
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Judge. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. All the things you could be doing, you take time out of your life to listen to this show. I really appreciate that. I understand you could be doing a thousand different things right now. That's not lost on me. And for all my regular listeners who tune in for every episode, welcome back. You guys know I do a happy dance every time I see your city, state, country, wherever you're listening to. I really appreciate it. Now, if you're someone who listens to every episode, you know at the end of every episode, I give a shout out to as many people as I possibly can who listened to the last episode. But if you ever listen to older episodes and you don't hear me giving you a shout out, it's just because that information's a lot harder to come by. But I do love it when I see older episodes listened to. That is so awesome. And just one other thing, even though every episode sounds like the same thing when I'm saying this in the beginning, I never cut and paste this part. The music part, yes, that's always the same thing. But this whole intro thing, I just wanted to let you know, just out of fairness, it feels like I'm cheating if I cut and paste my intro. I just want to let you know. Some people are asking about that. Now, if you're a first-time listener, welcome aboard. I hope you truly enjoy our show. And if you do, please share it with your friends, like it, whatever you do, share it on social media, whatever it is, I'd really appreciate it. So let me tell you a little bit about our show. First of all, clearly, we are not journalists. We haven't gone to any elite Ivy League school and paid thousands of dollars to have somebody else tell us what it takes to make a good movie. We're smarter than that, and so are you. Nor have we traveled the world and spoken to the old wise men and asked about the deep, hidden meanings behind Hollywood's visions. We are just a judge. We haven't done any of these things. But what we have done is watch a lot of movies. Some good, some not so good. And our goal here at the Cinema Judge is to help you, the jury, spend your hard-earned money wisely, because we all want the same thing, an enjoyable movie experience. Now, I've been doing this show as a cable access show in Bloomington, Minnesota for over 20 years now. And what we do there is this. The studios, they send us interviews, film clips, on-the-set footage. And often, like in today's episode, they give us world premiere interviews. So I edit all that together, and I put it together as one giant infomercial of sorts. I let them pitch the movie to you. They often explain what attracted them to the project. They often, talk about the themes of the movie and why they think you should see it and what they hope you take away from the film. I simply collect these interviews as evidence and present them to you, and you decide if you want to see this movie or not. I will never, ever, ever, ever tell you not to see a movie, because consider this your movie oasis. We're all about the love of movies here, because all that matters is what you think. Because my whole life, I've seen as many movies as I can, or TV shows, whatever it is. Because you never know unless you watch it for yourself. I love it when I find that gem of a movie. Because my friends and I would watch every movie underneath the sun. Because that's the joy. Because those are the movies, the memories, that sometimes you take with you that you never forget. Because like I always say, any movie is somebody's favorite movie. Now, if you're interested in watching this TV version of the show, you go to Bloomington, Minnesota's website. That's BLM as in Bloomington, .mn/BTV-shows. And type in Cinema Judge. And several episodes will show up. And you can watch anytime you want on demand. Not 20 years worth, but there's a few out there. Now, if you're wondering what the difference is between the TV version and this podcast version, well, there's some obvious differences. Obviously, you can't watch the interviews. So here, we just introduce the interviews in between, like, here's Bob or here's Sally or whomever. And also, on a TV version, sometimes we have some great B-roll on the set footage. But, obviously, we can't do that here. So I have to omit that. And also, the other big issue is, on a TV version, you never see or hear me at all. It's just all information. Zero interruptions from me. Now, approaching the bench today, we have the film Old. Now, this is the next film in M. Night Shyamalan's incredible career. Now, if you really look at his film legacy, I mean, some of you might say, well, this wasn't that great or this wasn't that great. But no matter how you break it down, he has made some legendary films. I mean, he knows how to make a quality film. And what really sets him apart, he finances his own films. So he has complete control. If you like it or not, it almost comes down to, well, it was all in his hands. And I really admire that. He puts his money where his mouth is. You know, a lot of people who can't do that, unfortunately, but their vision is corrupted by all the other producers or film companies or whatever it is. Whatever M. Night does, it's what he wants to do. I mean, if you really look at his career from, well, I mean, most of us first were introduced to him in the 1999 film, The Sixth Sense. I mean, was that a masterpiece or what? If you think about it, he had a lot to live up to after that because everybody loved that film. So anything you do after that, it's going to be a letdown. But it wasn't. Unbreakable was equally as powerful. There were some shots in that were just were magical. And it was just like, wow, this guy is really dialed in. And then he did Signs in 2002, Village in 2004, Lady in the Water 2006, The Happening 2008. And then a lot of people weren't a huge fan of this one, but in 2010, he did The Last Airbender. And then you could go on and on. He's had such a great career. But here, this film is called Old. Now, here's a trailer for it.
No kids allowed on the beach? What?
No. That's not true!
Oh, no! Oh, no!
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
Are we there yet? You said 5 minutes. Technically, it's been more than 5 minutes.
Let's just all start slowing down.
Wow, you believe I found this online?
I guess it's not that secret a beach.
Whoa, who would leave this?
From the hotel, they're so rusted.
What's happening?
Found stuff from the hotel in the sand.
I don't know.
What happened to her?
Body has decomposed.
How quickly can that happen?
7 years.
But she just died.
Wait, where are the kids?
Trapped, Kara!
Come here!
Hey, have you seen my children?
Mom? I'm right here.
Why are you looking at me like that?
What's happening to us?
My daughter just turned 6 2 weeks ago.
Mom?
Whatever's happening to us is happening very fast.
You have wrinkles.
There's something wrong with this beach.
What's happening?
Mom! 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 I'm scared!
We have to get off this beach!
People are blacking out going this way.
If she makes it to the ledge, she might have a chance.
Why is she stopping?
Why is she stopping? Kara, wake up! Wake up!
They have to know what this place does.
I don't know!
You're lying!
Look!
What is that?
A message.
We never leave each other. Nothing separates us.
We're connected to something bigger.
Oh, no. We're here for a reason.
Now, approaching the bench next, we have the first of several featurettes. Now, in these featurettes, the studios, they have these pre-packaged events, if you will. They have, like, they want to talk about this, that, and the other. Now, in this first featurette, it's a lot of M. Night. And he talks about where he was in each part of each movie. For example, like, where, let's see, in this interview, he talks about, like, when he did Split. That explained where he was in that time of his life, and et cetera, et cetera. this movie talks about his parents getting older. And it's just really fascinating in how he picks his projects and his mentality and how he approaches this movie, the shots, the scenery, the location. And later on, you're going to hear in the show where he talks about where he got this idea. It's actually from a graphic novel. So here he is talking a little bit more about that whole process.
I don't ever think I make horror, ever. It's very dark, disturbing and dark.
What happened to her mom?
I don't know.
But it's not horror. Horror has an almost sense like that's the destination. This is meant for us to come out on the other side with a belief system stronger for it. These movies, the original movies that are mine, they represent where I am at each moment. Unbreakable represents where I was, and Split represents where I was, and The Visit, and you name it. And then my father and mother who are getting, you know, very old, and what do I feel about that? When I go there, and the roles have switched.
We have to get off the beach!
The idea of being renewed is essential. I want to start over and come up with a new style.
On this beach, 30 minutes is a year.
It seems like the most open space, this huge beach in this cove, and then things become more and more weird and more threatening. That slow turn from something that was safe to something that's unsafe is a beautiful goal of ours in the movie. What I keep trying to do as I write is to imagine the very worst things and would I survive that as a human being emotionally? When I come back out on the other side, can I be stronger for that experience? I want audiences to come into their theater and never have seen something like that before.
Now coming up next, we're going to hear from M. Night and some producers, and they're going to talk about the locations that it took to shoot this particular film.
This was a nightmare of logistics, how to shoot this movie.
Wow. I just got chills.
Bringing old to life has been quite the process. Night wrote a great script, and then we started looking for two specific locations, one being a private, magical beach, and then the other being a spectacular resort.
The idea of an isolated beach with the weight of a wall containing our guests became more interesting for us visually and story-wise. It's something that you want to be at. You want to take your sandals off, take your shirt off, and jump in the water. What then has to happen quickly is that same thing that was inviting to you, it was important that it became the villain in the story as it progressed.
You know, we looked everywhere, and when I say everywhere, I mean everywhere on the planet for a place that could be this beach that I imagined in my head. We were forced into shoot it in the hurricane season in the Caribbean. You can't get insurance for COVID. You can't get insurance for hurricanes. This is insanity. We built the wall, and then the hurricane hit. And the wall got taken out. We took a big, big risk. Can you imagine the logistics involved in every single day between where the light is in the sky, where the water is on the beach? You have to shoot the beginning of the script in the morning and the middle of the script in the middle of the day and the end of the script at the end of the day, every day. And then on top of it, the hurricane season kept on taking the beach away, eating the beach away. We had to become experts in the motion of water and how many joules of energy are in waves. And we had to learn all of that to say, hey, at 2 p.m., we're going to lose most of the beach as the high tide comes in. We have to get this scene and that scene done. There was no room for error at all. We shot this in a very specific amount of time, and we literally did not have one more day. That's how tight it was. The idea that we got to make this movie and tell this story was very precious to us.
Now coming up next, we're going to hear from some of the cast members, and they're going to talk about the whole concept of this movie, about how it's about time, and how it's fleeting, and how they approach their characters.
We invented time so things don't happen all at once. And what do you do when you don't have that?
Half an hour is equivalent to something like 1 year of our lives.
When time is moving so fast.
what I love about M. Night's work is that he asks you to face fear. With this story, it's so special because that fear is also old age. Life is a fleeting thing. And actually, by facing that fear very immediately, he's asking you also to appreciate the moment.
There's no set timeline for life. There's so little we can control in our lives. So you just got to kind of roll with the punches.
Instead of dealing with stuff or sorting stuff out, it's more about being completely face-to-face with immediacy. Everything is so present and so overwhelming.
To me, the best films that I've seen opened up interrogations. It has made me come out of the cinema feeling that I want to live.
I came to this island and see the ocean and remember I'm connected to something bigger.
You make all of these problems for them, all of the thriller problems, all of the personal problems, and the answer is ultimately just being present. You don't have to do anything but go, I'm right here, right now, with this person. Man, I am so lucky. That's the goal of the movie.
Now, coming up next, we're going to have another featurette. Now, in this featurette, you're going to hear from M. Night. And in the beginning, he talks about watching his kids grow up and the whole themes of that. And then later on, you're going to hear from other cast members talking about their characters and how they see time and how, with time, how we all see things differently.
Are we there yet? You said 5 minutes.
Let's just all start slowing down.
The movie is about seeing your children grow up so fast. That's the feeling that I wanted to capture.
There's a moment near the beginning of the film where Maddox realizes she's aging and she doesn't know how to be touched by her mum anymore.
Dad, why are you looking at me like that?
The older you get, you start to, things become deeper, like colors become more complicated.
For a child, the world is very concrete. But as soon as you start introducing the idea of death and unpredictable variables, they begin to develop perception.
Mom! 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 I'm scared!
Maybe the world numbs you a little more, gives you a little more nuance in your colors. In some ways, I think also Night's movie is so respectful to kids and their intelligence.
Night made this very clear. He didn't want Thomas and Alex or I to be imitating children. He wanted us to take on the physicality of an adult.
As your body's growing, the matrix of your mind is changing as well. You don't have the life experience. So there's that gap in the life experience, but the matrix in how you're taking in the world is complex and subtle. So that was a really interesting task for the actors to get a hold of.
So coming up first, we're going to hear from M. Night. Now, in his interview, he talks about how the characters feel trapped and there's no way out.
It seems like the most open space, this huge beach in this cove. And then as things become more and more weird and more threatening, and they can't leave, it becomes very claustrophobic for these individuals on this beach. And you can see them panicking and they're trying to get out. There's no doors to leave. And that suffocation the audience feels. And what used to be beautiful now becomes oppressive and dangerous. The water, which looks so beautiful at first, just becomes death to you. That slow turn from something that was safe to something that's unsafe is a beautiful goal of ours in the movie.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Rufus Sewell. Now, most of us know him from the fantastic The Man in the High Castle. If you've never seen that show, make sure you check it out, because he is fantastic. And also, another great TV show that he was in, it's called Victoria. It is so good. Check him out in that. When you watch that particular role, and then you watch him in The Man in the High Castle, how completely different those characters are, and you're like, wow, that really shows his depth. So here he is talking about the script and his character.
It's an extremely unusual and gripping read. It's not quite like anything else I've ever read before. And the character itself is so contradictory and so difficult to get a handle on. It took me a couple of reads to really work out how I felt about him.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Aaron Pierre. He plays the character Mid-Sized Sedan. I said that right, Mid-Sized Sedan. Now, in his interview, he talks about his character and also what he drew on to make this character.
In my mind, Mid-Sized Sedan is, he's a musician, specifically a hip-hop musician. And I envision him, in my mind, as a very conscious lyricist. People who I drew inspiration from for this character are some of my favorite artists, like J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, Nipsey Hussle, to name a few. These are artists in the real world who, in my mind, are so conscious and so thoughtful, and have a real sense of who they are. And I drew a lot of inspiration from artists, those artists themselves and other artists similar, to mold this character. He's a very thoughtful person, Mid-Sized Sedan. Maybe to his detriment, maybe to his benefit, but it's such a great character to explore.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear another interview from Rufus Sewell. Now, he really discusses a really interesting concept to me. We often think, hey, I'm on the right side. But you know what? We're not always on the right side.
People might think that they are on one side, but they're driven by forces underneath them that you don't know what you secretly believe sometimes. People do not know. They might think they're on the side of good, but they might have impulses that are subterranean that are different. And sometimes these things come out in madness. In my experience, quite often, that unresolved fears, conflicts spill out in a very dangerous and frightening way.
Now, coming up next, we're going to play a clip from this film. Now, in a scene, I'm going to try to set this up the best I can. In this particular scene, we have Rufus, who's playing Charles, and the whole group is sitting around talking, because in the scene, they point off to the distance, there's a body covered up, and there's a discussion going on. And in this conversation, he is somewhat making an accusation against the character Mid-Sized Sedan. And everybody's going, what's going on? And then as they're kind of having this little discussion from around this little rock ledge, a woman comes around and says, hey, your mother's looking for you. And he kind of walks off going, hey, he kind of throws up his hands going, I have nothing against this man, but, you know, we're all in this together. So here's the scene from Old.
We have to get the resort people before they leave. I think we will all have to leave this beach.
Wait, why? They left already. What happened?
We really don't know what happened.
Well, I think this man had something to do with it.
Man, if I was involved, why would I be standing around, bro? Damn.
His nose is bleeding. I think he got that when she was trying to defend herself.
I don't like this dynamic at all. Well,
my nose has been bleeding for hours, man. I don't know why he's doing that.
Charles, something's wrong with your mother. She's asking for you, honey.
Well, we're all in this now. We are responsible for that woman. And I've got nothing against this man. I'm just doing what needs to be done.
Now, coming up next, we're going to have a fantastic interview from M. Night. Now, in this interview, he talks about the cast and everybody involved are from all around the world. Because, like in his life, everybody in his world are from all over the world. And these characters that are in this movie, they are all different ethnicities. And what I love about this interview, when you listen to the very end, he talks about they're only playing characters. They're playing a wife, they're playing a brother, they're playing a mother. Whatever they're playing a character, not their ethnicity. And I love how he says at the end, I'm glad that we're getting there. But listen to this interview. It's really fantastic.
You know, I'm definitely, when I sit to think about a movie, I think about my aunt who lives in Malaysia and my cousin who's in London and my other cousin in Singapore and my uncle who lives in Australia. And I have family all around the world. And I think that all of those influences, especially the cinema from all the different places in the world as well, are in my movies. And it's an important part of who I am. And so when I tell stories, they're for the whole world. And United States is where my home is, but it's one of many places I'm telling the story to. And so to have a cast that represents so many of those countries. I mean, we had so many people from all the different countries, and so many of them did their accents themselves. It was a beautiful thing to have a story where people of all different backgrounds were just playing dad, mom, neighbor, doctor. They weren't playing their ethnicity. They were just playing being a dad or a mom or a husband, you know, and we were supposed to identify with them. That's a really beautiful thing that we're at that place.
Now, coming up next, we're going to have a great interview from Rufus Sewell, and he's going to talk about the whole dynamics of M. Night's directing, about angles and positions and everything like that. I love these kind of interviews.
He's got very strong ideas about the way he wants to shoot it, the way he composes the shots have been pre-planned, and sometimes the idea of the way to play the scene that you have in your head is very different from the way it's composed. And the way it ends up being physically composed sometimes diametrically opposed the way you've geographically, not just geographically, that means emotionally, because how close you stand to someone, whether you're facing away from them, towards them, these things have their emotional causes. But what I think has given us a lot of faith is that occasionally when you're feeling confused about the way a scene is being constructed physically, you'll get a glimpse of the shot and you'll realize that it's the storytelling is more clear in the frame than it feels to you. And once that became familiar, that experience, we started to trust more and more.
Now coming up next, we'll hear from Rufus Pierre, and he also talks about M. Night.
Night has such an incredible clarity of vision, and at the same time is so open to receiving ideas and receiving thoughts and offers. And that's what makes, in my opinion, his work timeless. So it's an honor to be here working on old, and I truly believe this is something truly special, man.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from M. Night. Now, in his interview, he talks about why they were shooting. It was almost like they were in unison with the people that were in the movie. They were all isolated. And everywhere they went together, they had to stay together because they shot this movie during the pandemic. So they had to be very, very careful on the whole shooting process.
It was all of those things. It was paradise and hellacious. It was almost what the characters were going through, we were going through. We were obviously isolated because we were doing it during the height of the pandemic. So we couldn't go anywhere. I mean, you couldn't even, you know, stroll off of the beach and go to the local town. You couldn't do anything, right? The actors and I, we were just there, back to the hotel, back again. So we had that same sense of being trapped, but it was also beautiful and an intense feeling of this juxtaposition of something very scary happening in our lives, and yet we're in a beautiful place. And I think that thing of horror and beauty together is what makes old, like, kind of special for audiences, that they see it and it sticks with them, that juxtaposition.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Alex Wolff, who plays Trent. Now, he also talks about how great it was to work with M. Night.
But Night, more than other directors, I find to be very collaborative, I guess, is the best word that I can say, and open. I find him to be, as much choreographed as he is, I find him to be really open. And he's precise about what he's precise about. You know, he's very precise about his words that he wrote. He's very precise about where the camera's going. You know, he wants to see you. I find him to be the perfect combination of things, of directors, where he's both, you know, trying to get you to do things very specifically, but also if you have an idea that you've thought about for a while, he's more than willing to embrace it. Night really is looking out for your best interest, and Night really has the whole picture and is also with you in that moment.
Now, coming up next, we're going to hear from Thomasin McKenzie, who plays Maddox. She's going to talk about the dynamics and the whole technique behind M. Night's directing.
Night says there's hunters and there are gatherers, and he's a hunter where he knows what he wants, and then the gatherers, they're the directors that turn up on the day and they go, oh, that would be nice, or that could be cool, or Knight's the opposite of that. He knows, and I think I'm like, my tendency is more towards, I mean, I'm not a director, but as an actor, I'm more towards gathering. Oftentimes I'll show up on the day and I'll have prepared, but I don't know, sometimes I'm not quite so direct as that. And so for me, it's, I have to give a lot of trust tonight that he knows what he wants, he knows what's going to work, and he knows what it'll look like. And so I kind of have to surrender to that, you know, being so choreographed, and go, he knows what's going to be good, he knows what's going to look good. So I trust completely in him. Knight is he's a real family man. He had his daughters here, his whole family came here. So I really appreciated that feeling that there was family, it was a family environment. And having the cast, it's such a wonderful cast, especially like Vicky and Gael, they really, really took on a very parental role for me. So I felt really supported, that there were people I could go to if I wasn't feeling secure in any way. And having Eliza and Alex and Abby, just the whole cast was so wonderful. So that was a really amazing for me. I don't think I've gotten as like close with a cast in any other, like I feel so like we're really, really, really tight with this cast. It's like a very unique experience for me.
Now coming up next, we're going to hear from M. Night. Now in his interview, he talks about how he came up with the story or where it came from. He talks about how his kids gave him a graphic novel for Father's Day. Here, a major movie gets made all because his kids gave him a graphic novel and he enjoyed it.
Well, my kids are the reason I'm doing this movie, because they gave me the graphic novel for Father's Day. So very ironic, you know, a movie about aging and kids growing up, and your kids actually give you this graphic novel. And they found it's an obscure graphic novel they found in a comic book store. It was like, it's actually like a movie, you know, premise of like finding this obscure book. And you know, Shauna, who directed Second Unit, is an amazing filmmaker. I mean, all our kids grew up in a house of art, you know? I always tell them when they were babies and a fan comes up to me and says, oh, I love your movies, and they walk away and they go, what do you think about that, Dad? And I'm like, well, you know, that person paid for one of the bricks of our house. So you have to be gracious to them, you know? And I said, and it's from the things that I make up in my head, so we're really, really lucky. And so they have really come to honor the art form of film and music and dance and all of those. They take it very seriously. And so Shauna has grown up in that environment and is an amazing filmmaker. And so it was a beautiful thing to be on one side of the beach shooting, and I see down the beach she's shooting something else. It's an amazing feeling. And at the end of the day, we were like, you know, work buddies. At the end of the day, we would go and have a drink and eat something at the bar at the hotel, and then fall asleep. And we would just chat about what happened. Oh, I can't believe the camera jammed on that thing. We would share stories.
Now, coming up next, we're going to take you to the world premiere of Old. Now, in this first set of interviews, we're going to have several from M. Night. He's going to talk about how great it is to have people back in the theater watching it together. How having that moment together really enhances the experience. So here's M. Night from the world premiere of Old.
I mean, when we picked the date, it was a guess. You know, we did it during the pandemic, and we were hoping, you know, that it would all work out to be here. Everything about the movie feels a little bit miraculous, that we shot it in the pandemic and that we're here in a movie theater with people. And for a lot of people, it'll be their first time coming back to the movie theaters, coming to see this movie. And that's part of the reason we wanted to time it, to kind of bring everyone back together again in this way, which is the art form that I love. There's so many reasons why seeing a movie in the theater is the highest form of the art form. Part of it is that we all collectively affect each other in that room. When we watch something or we read something by ourselves, we're bringing only our own worldview to the table. But you can't help it being in a room with 500 strangers that you start to take on a little bit of everybody's point of view, and we have a collective worldview. They were just such a beautiful thing. The 13-year-old girl is affecting that 55-year-old guy in the other corner of the room. She's giggling at something that's making him think of, oh yeah, the demeanor of that actor is really funny, the way he's, you know, all of those things, they each affect each other, and he's affecting her with some gravitas about the depth of it and thinking about things that maybe she wouldn't normally think about. So everybody affects everybody. It's a beautiful thing when we all get together. This one was unusual. Old came from a graphic novel called Sandcastle that my girls gave me for a Father's Day gift. So very strange, and I was very suspicious about that, because everything they give me I think is amazing. And you know, so I was very kind of like, am I feeling this strongly about this because they gave it to me? But in the end, the idea was so powerful and was something that I wish I had come up with. So I, you know, it really said to me, you could spend 2 years making this.
Now, coming up next from that same world premiere, we're going to hear from Rufus Sewell. Now, he talks about the whole joy again of being together in the theater, enjoying it as a unit, not just by yourself. And also in this interview, he talks about how great it was to work with M. Night.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it with an audience, because even watching it on my own, there were points when I kind of wished that there was a crowd there. You know, it's quite a crowd pleaser, I think. I don't know, because it's not like he's a kind of shock horror director. You know, there's a lot of mystery, there's a lot of suspense. But, you know, ever since The Sixth Sense, there is nothing like experiencing the kind of shock of revelation with a crowd of people. I mean, you know, I think it's the kind of... this film, very much so, is the kind of thing that really benefits from watching with a crowd, I think. But great on its own, too. I think it's his ability to absolutely control your experience of watching it. He's kind of a master in the way that he puts the images together and the story and all the elements, and he's very much in control of every element of the film and of the audience too. So if he doesn't want you to know something, you don't know it. And I think it's quite fun to be just, you know, as part of an audience. That's kind of an exciting thing, I think. Well, for me, that was one of the best things about it, was the fact that it felt like a theatre company, in that there wasn't any obvious hierarchy. We rehearsed together, we were all in the same place, and we went to the same place every day, which is kind of what I love about doing plays. So it was very much like a company. We were all working together all the time. There wasn't really kind of big trailers or anything. I wish there were, but there was, like, we were in little huts and we ate together. And it's really the way that I prefer to work, you know, and day by day we kind of just got more and more absorbed into this experience. I mean, very quickly, actually. I mean, we arrived and we were all quarantining apart and then together, you know, so we were like very much like a company. It's not always you get the chance to do that these days with films, you know.
Now, I hope you enjoyed our in-depth look at Old. Now, if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, any way to improve this show, please feel free to let me know. CinemaJudge@hotmail.com, because like I always say every episode, I can't fix what I don't know what is broken. So please feel free to let me know. Now, for all the listeners out there who are still listening after the show now is kind of officially wrapped up for the shoutouts, well, this is for you. For all you around the world, I hope my voice finds you well. For those listening in your car, going to or from work, or just driving around on your weekend doing your errands, I'm glad to be your co-pilot. You drive, let me yap. Or if you're at break from work, if you're sitting there at your table, having lunch, sitting at your office, or just plowing through your workday, thank you so much for listening. Or if you're at home, brushing your teeth, taking a shower, or you just sitting around listening on your own free time, wherever, whenever, or whatever you're doing, this is for you. And for every one of you from all over the world. I mean, on last week's episode, I had a lot of listeners from vast places. So I had a lot from the United States. Thank you, guys. I had several from Germany. So if you listen from Germany, thank you for either listening to twice or sharing with people, whatever it is. Germany, thank you. And I hope you keep sharing it with other listeners or friends or what have you. Canada, you guys, again, stepping up and listening. Thank you so much. The Netherlands, thank you so much for taking time out of your life. France, again, it goes without saying, you're always there listening. I tip my cap to you. No matter what episode, you always listen. I'm glad you enjoy the show. In Argentina, I mean, that is so cool. Argentina, I look at all these countries. Where are you? What are you doing? What time of day do you listen? Whatever it is, I am just flattered beyond any word I could ever say to you. So everybody around the world, thank you so very much. To all my listeners in Minneapolis, you guys, again, thanks for listening so very much, and thanks for sharing it if you've been doing that. St. Paul, again, several listeners from there. Thank you so much for taking time out of your life. Again, Farmington, whether you shared it with other people or you listened to it more than once, thank you so much for listening. I hope you continue to listen. And every time I mention this, I butcher the name, so I'm already going to tell you this in advance. But from Germany, Frankfurt, Am Main Hesse, or is it Hesse or Hesse? Again, multiple listens there. Whatever you're doing, if you're listening to twice or sharing it, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life. Denver, Colorado, Madison, Wisconsin, Annandale, Virginia. Thank you, Virginia. Again, you guys always take time out of your life. Thank you. Pasadena, California. just when I hear something like that in California, I mean, every location just blows my mind. But, you know, because it's, California, I'm like, woohoo, thanks, California. Bristol, Pennsylvania. Wow, thank you, Pennsylvania. So many of you, every episode from Pennsylvania, listen, I am very grateful. Bellevue, Washington. Thanks, Washington. And again, this is another one I'm just going to completely screw up. Kitchener, Ontario. Canada, you guys are always listening. Thank you so much. Burnsville, Minnesota. Thank you, Burnsville. Is it Holyoke, Massachusetts? Or Holyoke? Whatever it is. Thank you for taking time out of your life. Alamosa, Colorado. That is so cool to hear people from Colorado. I always get different locations there. Thank you so much. Zuoli, Overzell. I have no idea on that one. But for you out there, thank you so much for listening. It's OverIJSSEL. Wherever you're from, thank you. New Prague, Minnesota. Thank you so much, New Prague. Washington, Virginia. Every episode. Thank you so very much. In Buenos Aires. So cool to have you listening. All of you, every one of you, taking time out of your life. Don't think I don't appreciate it, because I do. I am so grateful. And I hope you keep listening and sharing it with your friends. And I hope you enjoy these shows. Now, this week's special bourbon shout-out goes to, and this, I'm going to apologize in advance. I had a lot going on in my head when I was there. But I think it was either Stacy or Tracy. Was it Stacy from Abbott? Thank you so much for taking care of my people. I appreciate your hard work and everything that you do. Not just for my world, but for everybody. Your hard work is greatly appreciated. So, cheers to you. And now, the part of the show where it's pretty much just music talk. And for those who stick around, thanks very much for sticking around to the very, very end. And for those who are unaware what I do at this part of the show, this is what I generally do. I talk about what I was listening to when I made this particular episode, what music I was playing in the background. And then, sometimes I talk about what I was listening to just to get mentally prepared, so I get all psyched up, because sometimes I get lost in my head, and I get all freaked out. And so in order to calm myself, I play music either the days before or that day. Now, when I was making this particular episode, for whatever reason, I was in some kind of state ahead or whatever I was doing, I didn't play anything in the background. It was just straight up doing the show. And I had no music in the background. That rarely happens when I'm making any kind of episode like this, like when I'm making the video part of it. I always have something to play in the background. Not this time. But this week when I was preparing for the show, I was kind of on a Springsteen run. I was doing like The River in a really great album that doesn't get a lot of play, but it's really enjoyable. It's Darkness on the Edge of Town. That is just loaded with great tunes, like from Badlands to Adam Raised the Cane. That song just hits it. It's just, everybody's involved. You feel the passion, just the energy of that song. So if you ever even have a chance, if you don't want to listen to the whole album of Darkness on the Edge of Town, listen to Adam Raised the Cane. It smokes. But so many other songs on there, from Candy's Room, Racing in the Street, Something in the Night. It's just fantastic songs. But you know what? Before I forget, also during the week, I was throwing down some Queen. If you've never heard much of Queen, you got to give them a shot. Not just the ones that we all know. But for example, A Night at the Opera. Night at the Opera is an incredibly great album. There's so many songs on there that you might not have heard of, but they are just solid. And of course, it does have legendary songs on it, from Bohemian Rhapsody, Love of My Life, and of course the classic You're My Best Friend. But there's so many songs on that album that are even just really ring awesome. There's a great song called I'm in Love with My Car. That's I'm in Love with My Car. Whatever, something about that song, it just really kicks butt, and I just love it. I mean, the title alone, you think, how can I make a song on that? But Freddie can, and he does. Again, that's A Night at the Opera by Queen. And almost, they consider this almost a sequel to that. It's called A Day at the Races. I listened to both those throughout the last week. It's just a really good album. The reason why I did that was I was watching a TV show, and in the TV show, they had playing in the background, Let Us Cling Together. It's such a good song, and I had forgotten about it, but it's really good. I believe in the middle of it, they also sing in a different language. So after I heard that in the background, I go, well, I gotta listen to it. So that's what I did. I put on A Day at the Races, and A Night at the Opera. If you ever have the fancy, give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Well, that's it, my friends. My glass awaits. Cheers to you and to the movies. So until next time, be well, be good, and I'm gone. I'm Jeff. Thanks for listening to The Cinema Judge.